The Man in Line, brought to you by netzeromatrix.com, your one-stop shop for advice on renewable energy solutions and other green initiatives.
Fast away. Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Open line today. It was due to be the day that Rob Callister would have been in his role as Health and Social Care Minister, but obviously the events of the past few days have caused a rethink on that. Rob Callister will be in a few weeks' time in his role as a backbencher, unless events take another turn. Now, the Matrix signs at Sulby towards the mountain, Bagarrow, Hilbury and Ramsey to the mountain are showing fog. So please do take care. Some high winds around. And due to the forecast, adverse weather, tonight 7.45, Ben McCree to Heysham is subject to disruption, possible cancellation, to give the sailing every opportunity to take place. The master will decide at 5:30. So we'll have an announcement right at the start of update tonight at 5:30. So we keep our fingers crossed that everything is going to be fine. Elizabeth's with us now, first of all, on Man in Line. Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you? Good afternoon. You well?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Well, the weather could be better, but you know.
Oh, well, at least it's dry to a certain extent, isn't it? And the wind hasn't gone up yet. Anyway, I'd like to discuss the fact that it is, if you die, it is so expensive to have a funeral on this island. Yeah. And in 2020, I was making my will. In March 2020, I was making my will. And someone told me that this man could do funerals as well. You know, it's called Safe Hands Funeral Plans. And you pay for your funeral. And when you die, you're just put into a box and taken to a funeral parlour and then cremate until such time was time to be cremated. Mm-hmm. And no services, no nothing like that. And I paid £1,895, and that was in March 2020. Now, in March, 23rd of March 2022, I get a letter to say the place is in administration. I do believe that the man who owned it, or who was running it, has buggered off with the money.
And where this is the Safe Hands Plans.
Funeral Plans.
Yeah, it's a UK company, isn't it?
Yes, it is a UK company. But you see, I rang the undertakers here to see if I could just get a funeral round about the same price for just to be put in a coffin and taken to the crematorium. No hearse, no cars, no nothing. And they were quoting £3,500. So naturally, I went with this supposedly good deal, who's ended up not being a good deal. Because, I mean, a friend of mine, her husband died a while ago, and it was over £5,000 for a funeral. Well, that was with the service and stuff like that. But I can't understand why they can maintain asking £3,500 just to put somebody in a coffin and take them to the crematorium. How did they work out such figures?
Well, what's interesting in that, as you said, it seemed like a good deal at the time. It seemed too good to be true, and obviously it's proved
too good to be true. Not only me, lots of people on this island went with this Safe Hands Funeral Plans. Couples went, you know, husbands and wives have been out there, you know, lots of people. And now they sent me a form some time ago to fill in to see if I could get back some of my money. And I was told by the man who did my will, you might only get about 10 pence in the pound.
Well, I understand that company wasn't regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Wasn't it?
No, it wasn't regulated. The prepaid funeral plans come under FCA regulations. And I think there's a company called Dignity, is it? And I think the Co-op do one in the UK. They are regulated, but this Safe Hands lot weren't regulated.
I thought it was. And it's in Yorkshire, someplace in Preston Road, Wakefield, West Yorkshire, is the address that's on the thing for the Safe Hands Plenary Band. But why can people get away with doing that to people? You know, how can they get away with, I don't know how can sleep at night stealing people's funeral money.
Well, obviously, there are people like that around. It's sad to say, Elizabeth, but there are people who make that their living. And P.T. Barnum used to have a saying, Elizabeth, there's one born every day.
I know, there's one dying every day as well, so there is.
Yes,
true. Well, but I can't understand why the undertakers will not let do a cheap plan over here. I mean, if you're not employing funeral cars, you're not employing churches and stuff like that. They should be able to do something on the island, so they should, you know.
I wonder why. I just wonder. I mean, obviously, it needs to be said that funeral directors have a living to make. They have to, they have to fund their business. But certainly, I've never heard of a cheap funeral plan on the Isle of Man, Elizabeth.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Hang on. Okay. Yeah. Bye. Who's that?
All right, good to talk to you, Elizabeth. Maybe it was Safe Hands Plan that were on the other line. Safe Hands Plans Limited are in administration. They've been in administration, I think, since March of this year. And if you bought a Safe Hands funeral plan for £1,500, well, obviously now that money is subject to the administrators and what they can get from any assets that Safe Hands may have. One of those things, isn't it? It may have seemed like a good idea at the time, but you will, if you're going for a prepaid funeral plan, obviously it will need to come under, if it's in the UK, it'll need to come under Financial Conduct Authority regulation. And Safe Hands Plan simply wasn't. Salutary lesson. And let's get to Julian with us. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Last week's Manx Independent cover story on the cannabis farm, which I think is going to be on the Cool Road. So that's going to be sort of nearer to the main road from Jackson's Garage.
Yeah.
I noticed that the Manx Utilities objection was that they're going to need about 16 megawatts of electricity, which was equivalent, they reckon, to the total summer usage of the Douglas area. Now, that kind of industrial scale power is equivalent to around about 100 electric vehicles rapid charging, from what I can gather, which would be your normal types like your Hyundai, this type of thing, or about 45 Teslas, because they can draw more, assuming that you will be able to draw what's advertised when you get the car, because the brochure says you can charge at this, you know, like an hour's charge. That's not forgetting the fact that the Isle of Man has got at least 30,000 vehicles that will need to be replaced in the future if we go down this net zero route. So if 100 electric cars are going to take equivalent to the entire Douglas area, as far as the MUA is saying, 30,000 is going to be a bit of a headache. Also, the disruption to the environment has been mentioned with this farm, not only to the environment, but to the people, because they're talking about pipe and cable laying being a significant concern, especially for local ecology. And they were saying that some of the species threatened, and this is what was written down in the paper, were frogs, rare grasshoppers, bats, birds and insects. And the solar farm that they mention has a potential capacity of 9.5 megawatts, which would be a bit more than half of what they're saying. However, if you take a look out the window today, it'd be quite interesting if anybody's got a solar PV system at the moment, you know, kind of what sort of percentage of their max are they getting at the moment? Because I bet it's not a lot at the moment, because it's pretty miserable out there. So you've got that side of it. And this disruption to wildlife and the environment, if it's such a concern, then you've got to look at the wind turbines and the solar farms, like the big one that's talked about at Castletown. If they're concerned about a small one like that, when you're talking about an 84-acre one at Castletown, that must be an even bigger disruption. And also, Daphne Kane has mentioned that she's concerned about the somewhere around 14,000 tons of CO2 that could be emitted from the cannabis farm. Now, if you're concerned about that, when you make concrete, it's a one-to-one. So when you make a ton of concrete, a ton of CO2 is emitted. So we've recently talked about the Morgan, the Mona, and the Morecambe wind farms. So looking at the mega turbines, these huge, nearly 1,000-foot-high ones, They're requiring somewhere around 10,000 tonnes of concrete just for the foundations. That's not the steel, that's not the tower, and that's not the blades in terms of CO2 emissions from using propane to make the blades and the concrete for the tower and the steel for the whole shebang. So they say they want a load of power off this, which is about 2,600 turbines. So you're looking at the foundations alone are going to be 26 million tonnes of CO2 emissions just from making the foundations without the steel. So that, to me, there's a lot of points to be made. If we're going to start talking on the front page about worries about environmental disruption, cables and pipes and all the rest of it, and CO2 emissions, you have to look at the other side of this as well. But what's interesting is, if anyone looks at the Eden Project geothermal, just do a search for Eden Project geothermal, they've got a 5.25-inch pipe in the ground, and they're going to use that district heating, and they're not losing any heat from it. It's roughly, I think, 95 Celsius that they're putting round that sort of lower it down. They're growing all kinds of plants in those geodesic domes. Anyone that's been to the Eden Project, it's quite a large area, and there's lots of interesting things. You can walk inside and see all the tropical plants there. That's all coming off a 5.25-inch pipe with no fuel requirements afterwards. So I think if you look at the government money that's come in to do that, it's come up at about 15 million, I think, in total, which is probably a lot less than what the prom cost to do up. Why not think about doing that for something like the cannabis farm rather than all this messing about with solar things and
messing around? It just seems, Julian, that we don't get much joined up thinking. Now, 3 weeks today, Friday the 2nd, Daphne Kane, chair of the Climate Change Transformation Board, will be on Man in Line, so we can put lots of questions to Daphne. But certainly the question of the resilience of our electricity network, and particularly domestic supply, when it comes to this. And bearing in mind, we're talking about 7 years. I think what's, let me just see, Christmas is what's 5 weeks on Sunday, 6 weeks on Sunday, it's 2023. So in 6 years and 6 weeks, we're supposed to be supplying 100% electricity from carbon neutral sources. We have 6 years to get this sorted out. Now, bearing in mind how long it took to, as you say, to do the promenade and all the other government projects that went over, then, I mean, would you have much confidence in getting 100% renewables in 6 years and 6 weeks' time?
Well, I'm just wondering where the magic fairy dust is going to come from at night or on a day like today. Because if 100 cars that don't want to hang about for 12 hours to charge up and want to do it a bit quicker are taking the equivalent of the entire area of Douglas's electrical usage, and you've got over 30,000 cars to replace, the math doesn't add up, does it? And well, then you've got to think about heat pumps, because they're using 40 times what a normal oil or gas boiler uses. So you've got all that extra weight to go on as well. But at the same time, we're getting rid of our base load, all the gas and nuclear and everything, to get rid of, and coal. You know, bearing in mind, of course, that China is ramping up their coal production and coal power stations like Billio.
Well, our target for, they're saying they need, the government's target is 20 megawatts of locally generated renewable electricity by 2026. So that's 3 years and 6 weeks that we have to get 20 megawatts of locally generated renewable electricity. 3 years.
But 20 megawatts is about 150 cars rapid charging at the same time. So 150 cars out of, say, 30,000 on the island in the future will knock that out straight away.
So you would assume that that will be fairly straightforward to do, whether or not they're going to put an extra big hydroelectric up by Sulby Dam or whatever they're going to do. But as yet, we're a bit thin on detail.
It doesn't add up yet. I think the thing is, of course, there's been no discussion on this at all with anybody outside of everybody singing on the same hymn sheet. We need somebody that sits there and asks some difficult questions and gets some actual concrete answers instead of basically silence and just we're moving forward. on a journey.
Julian, that the Isle of Man is very well known as within the industry as an early adopter of new technology. Any new technology that comes along, the Isle of Man, one of the prime examples is anybody involved with Sky Television will tell you when Sky satellites first came out, one of the most densely requested areas was the Isle of Man. And people take new technology very quickly here. So surely you would think if anybody wants to run a pilot scheme, this will be the place to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in some ways it would make a little bit more sense to do it here because you've got limited distances, unless, of course, you're a taxi driver, because I don't think taxi drivers are too keen on having electric cars with a 100-mile range, you know, how much is electricity going to be in the future? And Rishi Sunak was talking some time ago about £1.50 per mile on electric vehicles in the future.
So that the government would then surely engage with all taxi drivers on the Isle of Man and the Taxi Drivers Association to say, how do we sort this out? How can we facilitate it for you? Because if you get the taxi drivers on board, they will spread the good news. And we all know, taxi drivers spread news all the time, sometimes good, sometimes not so good.
Exactly. By the way, one other tiny little point, and I'll disappear, to do with the wildlife. You know this recent story about the 130 geese up at the Ayres
that's
been found dead?
Yeah.
I'm just interested to know if the vets were only testing for flu, because I seem to remember for years and years and years being over here that there's landfill there, and there have been several studies around the world, including a big one in Pennsylvania, where they found birds that were either dead or they had funny eyes and all kinds of weird things. And it turned out it was either mercury or lead poisoning from nearby landfill leaching out from the visqueen, the stuff they put underneath to stop it from leaching out. Breaks down, it tends to go into the water table. I wonder if the vet tested the birds. In other words, did the birds die with flu or of flu, if you see what I mean?
There was a case, I'm trying to think, maybe more than 20 years ago, when the side of that Wright's pit, the side of the one that's close to the sea, was actually falling away and rubbish was coming out of that.
I remember very well because they had those big high nets up, and the seagulls were all in and out of it, and you had all the bits of paper and stuff catching in the wind, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, thanks, Julian. Thanks for bringing that up.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Okay, good to talk to you. Let's go to Peter, who's with us now. Hi, Peter.
Hello, Andy. Just a quick mention. I unfortunately had a granddaughter who died when she was 7, and when we went to pay the bill to the undertaker, he said there was no charge, so they're not all profiteering people like the lady suggested.
Okay, so, and do you want to give them a name check? Who was it?
No, I'm not, I won't, no.
Okay, all right, we appreciate that point. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling today. We were talking about Wright's Pit and Wright's Pit East particularly, and the situation about those gulls. Charles Gard is with us live in the studio. My word, you seem to home in on this. Do you have radar?
I just happened to be in the station for a completely different purpose. I heard that gentleman talking about Wright's Pit East. I did a video years ago on coastal erosion, which I'm updating at the moment. I've been following Wright's Pit East. The interesting thing is it's not lined. And
not
lined. It was never lined. And geologists told me a while back that at some point leachate would come out from there into the nearby sea. And a couple of years ago, I was up there filming again, and there were gentlemen in yellow jackets who were taking a sample out of a tube that had been put in the ground. And I mentioned this to them, and they were obviously DOI workers. They said, it's already happening. It's already coming out. Now, I'm not saying, as the gentleman suggested, there was mercury or anything nasty in there. I don't know. I filmed it many times when it was operational. There were thousands of tyres there. There's thousands of tons of domestic waste. And the cliff nearby is eroding. Peel's inspector at the time in 1996 virtually said, this is the stupidest application I've ever seen, but I'm going to have to say yes, because you've got nowhere else to put the rubbish. And that's what happened. The incinerator was late. The election was coming in July 1996. There was no answer to the island's landfill problems. Terry Groves asked for £1 million. They gave it to him. And that's where the rubbish ended up going. It is going to be an environmental disaster in the years to come.
Is it a Manx rumour then? But at the time, when the incinerator, the energy from waste plant, came on, was it true they trucked waste down from Wright's Pit to the incinerator?
I've never heard that, no.
Okay.
No, but that's, you know, what the solution's going to be, isn't it? How are they going to deal with all that? They're going to have to dig it all up and burn it, I would say. It's not going to happen for 25 years, but at some point a future generation is going to say, what on earth were these people doing?
But that will be 20, 30, 40 trucks a day going from Wright's Pit to the incinerator.
As it was, don't forget, when they filled Wright's Pit East, every refuse truck on the Isle of Man had to drive to the north of the island every day.
Yes,
if you were emptying the bins in Craigneish, you then went up to the Point of Ayre. It was mad.
When's the video coming out, Charles?
Oh, soon enough.
Okay, we'll let you know. Thanks very much indeed. Charles Gard with that story and the update on Wright's Pit. And David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. I'm just thinking while I'm in mobile at the minute there regarding the government, looking at the government and the politicians we've got, and that's the MLCs as well. Then I was looking the other day about the Council of Ministers. Then we have ministers in the department. Then we have members in the department. And I just had my thoughts when I was there was, we have all these ministers and members in the department, and what are the members of a minister's department doing? Are they doing any work? Do they have any projects that they're doing? So the ministers give them some work. And I just wondered now, not saying that on Rob's thing here, being the Minister for Health, I just wonder, and it looks from afar, looking in, that the three, and the females there, the ladies there, have got an issue or something with, A, they didn't want Rob as a Minister for Health, but it was an appointment by the Chief Minister, and I'm sure he asked the Council of Ministers what their thoughts were.
Well, when you were involved in government, David, what did political members do within a department? What was their role and how did they fulfil it?
They did a lot. I mean, in the DOI times with Bruce Hanney, we looked at legislation, we looked at the number of vehicles we had that were ghosting on the system. We brought in that thing for special plates that we made a few quid on. And even we used the ones which were had 999, the fire engine ones. They sold them off as well. And what I'm saying is that the minister can't do everything, although he's the department member and he's responsible. He's the one that gets booted out if something does happen. It's totally wrong. But the members of, say Home Affairs, that's a good one there. I was a member for, which was the fire brigade and the prison. And there must be issues in every department that not looking at legislation that's old. You revise it, bring it up to the minister, and you have meetings with the minister. And I'd love to find out what the members are in those departments. What are they actually doing? I don't see them beating their chests and saying, "I'm doing this for my minister," or supporting the minister in meetings they have at Keys. Or Timble, there'll be Timble tomorrow. There's not a lot, from what I can see, going on where you say we have entrepreneurs that want to come to the island. It's never been a better time to say to it, we are open to do things. And you talked about earlier about the cannabis farm. I may not agree with the principle about cannabis, but medically wise, 100% behind that. And the issue is when the company's wanting to develop factories there, to do projects and stuff like that for the Isle of Man, which we can actually ship in and ship out. Fairly easy stuff. It's not heavy goods.
Okay. All right. Thanks, David.
See you, boy.
All right. 12:30 on Manx Radio. Just can you confirm I'm not going Doolally? At that time, 20-odd years ago and more, when the energy from waste plant came on, were they trucking rubbish down from Wright's Pit to the incinerator to give it something to do? Because obviously it costs an awful lot of money to turn the incinerator off and to restart it. So obviously they have to keep it going. Did that, or am I just imagining this? Manx Utilities has given an assurance that electricity tariffs will be kept unchanged until April next year. Meantime, the wholesale gas price has dropped significantly, prompting Isle of Man Energy, used to be Manx Gas, to announce a retail price cut of almost 25% to its customers. Well, the chairman of Manx Utilities is Tim Johnson, MHK, and he says the downward movement of the wholesale gas price is encouraging, but it's still uncertain.
It's so volatile at the moment. I think that's the key we have to remember, is the price is going up and down on a daily basis. Yes, we have seen recently some falls, and then spot prices have actually been down back to sort of near close to what the prices have been for quite a long time previously. But looking ahead, these prices are still looking quite stubbornly high. There's still an awful lot of uncertainty. So, you know, it's still a very difficult market.
You've frozen prices, in fact, till April next year.
Yes.
Looking beyond that, I suppose you've been budgeting based on the very high prices. Does this mean that price rises in future could be less than expected?
I hope so. I mean, I think it's too early to speculate at this stage. I think what we're looking very closely where the market is at the moment. Like you said, we have seen some falls. I think once we get into the first quarter of 2023, we'll start getting a better feel of what the market's looking like. I think the weather's going to will play a big part in that. If we have a very, very cold spell in the UK or in continental Europe, that may have an effect. And of course, the ongoing situation in Ukraine is creating a huge amount of volatility. So, you know, it is really too early at this stage to say what will happen.
There he is, Tim Johnson, MHK, the chair of Manx Utilities. So we'll wait and watch, and certainly we'll watch the thermometer. Sue said, Andy, I asked a question last week about whether children over five are expected to pay for dental care if there's no NHS available. Didn't get a reply, so can we put the question to somebody in healthcare, please? Well, I'll pass that through to the newsroom, and next time we speak to somebody in DHSC, we'll try and get an answer, or if anybody's listening from communications responsible for DHSC, we'd love to hear from you. There is direct cremations at the moment for the Isle of Man, this is Texter 238. There is a company, an Isle of Man registered company, that provides direct cremations apparently for £1,800. No service, no hearse, no limousine, and no prepaid plans, that is. I'm not going to plug it. I'm just telling you that there are. And let me see a note in just to say, my brother died earlier this year. I arranged to have an unattended funeral with the undertakers who were part of the Dignity Group. The cost was £995, including VAT. Regarding my previous email, also that unattended funeral took place in the UK, says Joanne. It involved collection from a hospital, taken for subsequent post-mortem, cremation and collection of ashes. So why can't it happen on the Isle of Man, says this correspondent. So I'm wondering why Manx Utilities can't put a geothermal plant down at Pullrose Power Station and turn that into a green energy plant over the next few years. The building is there. Surely it's just a matter of moving a few things around in the generation hall, says this correspondent, on 807. So if the generation plant is there, surely that will be the place to put a geothermal. We haven't heard much from geothermal, and certainly that'll certainly be something that I'll put to Daphne came when she's on Man in Line in a few weeks' time. Daphne's on Friday, 2nd of December, she's going to be on. Next Monday, by the way, Jane Paul Wilson and Dan Davis, Home Affairs Minister, MHK, and Chief Exec Dan Davis will be in from Home Affairs to talk about, well, everything concerning Home Affairs. Claire Barber's going to be on a week on Wednesday, the DEFA Minister. And on the 30th, Wednesday, the 30th of November, another High School Outside broadcast. We're live at QE2.
Well, I think the question needs to be asked. It's come to that juncture now. We have had, as you've alluded to, several changes of positions and personnel over.
There he is, Tim Glover. The question needs to be asked. And that is the story about what is happening with, obviously, the DHSC minister, Rob Callister, who's been sacked, how it happened. We'll hear more from Tim Glover in a moment.
Concerned, confused or curious about climate change? Want to do your part? Then visit netzeromatrix.com, helping businesses and individuals understand the net zero targets that government has set, how they'll be achieved and what impact it will have upon us. Plus, get practical advice and tips for saving energy, the options available for switching to renewable energy technologies, and much more. We all need to do what we can. So visit netzeromatrix.com and join us. ShopRite. Shopping that's better all round. Shopping that costs less before you even start. Less travel, fuel and time. Because our stores are local to you. Prices? ShopRite has low prices as well as price matching. And switch and save is something else. Sainsbury's own brand. Hundreds of items you buy every day. Famous Sainsbury's quality assured, adding up to pounds less at the checkout. ShopRite, proudly locally owned.
Are you buying the right insurance for your business? What are you paying for exactly? With premiums rising year on year, it's important to make sure that you've got the right cover included in your policy. Aon will visit your business, review your insurances and provide advice on how your cover can be improved. For a free policy health check, call Aon today on 692 400. Aon Isle of Man Limited is registered with the Isle of Man Financial Services Authority as an insurance intermediary in respect of general business.
Can you ever get away with the perfect crime? Parker & Snell Company proudly presents Dial M for Murder, Frederick Knott's intensely dark and gripping thriller, a masterclass in suspense guaranteed to keep you on the edge of your seat with its spine-chilling twists and turns. Dial M for Murder, Thursday the 24th to Saturday the 26th of November. Tickets available now from villagaiety.com or on 600-555. Supported by your nation station, Manx Radio.
Conventional medical wisdom writes off Courtney Heading as an obsessive anti-vaccination conspiracy theorist, and having read or watched hours worth of articles and links he shared with me prior to this show, I would struggle to argue with that wisdom. His medical worldview is, though, shared with a relatively small but vociferous part of our community. We hear from him on Agenda at 6 p.m. this evening with me, Phil Gorn, on Manx Radio. Almost every source Courtney quotes regarding vaccines and viruses is rubbished by the overwhelming majority of medical science, so does he have a right to be heard?
The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com, the world's leading carbon register and validation ecosystem.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. 22 minutes before one. DHSC only has about 100 staff, so why does it have a minister and three members? Obviously, they don't get extra salary these days. Everybody gets a flat fee. But do they get expenses for being a member? Says G. Well, DHSC is also kind of the partner organisation, isn't it? The parent organisation of Manx Care. So they have that to look after. As the price of gas has gone down, will bottle gas go down in price, says Christine. What's the price for a bottle of propane these days? If you use it, can you tell me? Let's not forget we had a rubbish landfill for 30 years that burned continuously at the top of Howe Farm, where the TV transmitter is. Not everything went to the north, says Bernie. Thank you, Bernie. And if you walk the area of coast where Wright's Tip is, the coast has been eroding and the rubbish is going into the sea. Bear in mind that access is now impossible from Cranstall as the path has washed away a few years ago. I guess if it's not seen, it's not happening. I love Charles Gard, says 622. Thank you, Sue. Yes, we'll certainly, as soon as we know the Charles Gard Wright's Pit video is there. He does get to the heart of things, doesn't he, Charles? I love his style. Another mention, this is regarding Wright's Pit. Yes, says this correspondent, Derek said, I heard the rumour of rubbish being sent by lorry to the incinerator when it was first on, but of course in those days nobody had mobile phones, so we don't have any photos. But if you're around Cranstall, Point of Air, Lamb Hill, Bride, that area, did they used to take rubbish south to keep the incinerator burning? Or is that just Manx skeet and rumour? Tim Glover, MHK, is going to ask an urgent question tomorrow about the recent changes in the Council of Ministers lineup. Arbury Castle, Town of Maloo, MHK, Tim Glover. There have been six changes in the past 6 months. And obviously the most recent is Mr. Callister, who departed as Minister for the Department of Health and Social Care. Mr. Callister's account is that the three members, his three political members, Tanya August Hansen, Joni Farragher and Michelle Haywood, bluntly didn't support him or possibly actively worked against him. Well, the truth of that will come out in the wash. We asked. Tanya August Hansen was due to be on Perspective yesterday with Phil Gorm, but she pulled out at the last moment. We haven't heard from the other two members. Tomorrow, Tim Glover will ask the Chief Minister basically what's going on. So, why is Tim Glover asking the question?
Well, I think the question needs to be asked. It's come to that juncture now. We have had, as you've alluded to, several changes of positions and personnel over the last 6 months. And people out on the street, as I say, I was going and meeting all these agricultural people yesterday. You're out there and people were coming up and expressing concern as to what's going on at the moment with all the changes. So we've all stood on an election mandate of trying to be transparent. I think it would have been really remiss if a backbencher hadn't actually put a question in ahead of Tim Wald, an urgent question vis-a-vis the events we've just had in this last very week. So it's about transparency. It's being asked because people are talking about it, and we'll see where we go.
During your time as a member of the DOI, you've had a change of minister during that time. What effect does that have?
It does have a little bit of an effect, but it's more that the new minister coming in has to spend some time getting to know the department again. So there's a transition period when a new minister comes in. But the opportunity is there now on Tuesday for the Chief Minister to make a statement and to try and put some calmness back into the situation. But there's also an opportunity for backbenchers to air their views and hold the Chief Minister and the Council of Ministers to account, and that's important.
Presumably you're not the only MHK concerned about this right now.
I'm not. I've been at various meetings today on Friday, and there's been a lot of discussion, as you can imagine, as to the comings and goings that have gone on. So there is real concern on the backbenchers, and we'll hear more on Tuesday about that.
Italy on Max Radio, of course, tomorrow, AM 1368, live from the Keys. Tim Glover asking that urgent question to the Chief Minister. It'll be interesting to see what is happening. Obviously, circumstances before Mr. Ashford resigned and Tim Crookall resigned from Enterprise. We'll see. At the moment, Laurie Hooper's got two jobs. He's in the Department for Enterprise and also DHSC, so I wouldn't imagine that's going to go on for very long. I wonder whether Mr. Hooper will get his old job back in DHSC or they'll bring somebody else in. Thank you to a photographer who sent me a note in. Thank you, that. Earlier this week, you were discussing how off-season tourists could be encouraged to visit and appreciate the beautiful Isle of Man. I wonder if the enclosed, which was recently in the Sunday Times, would entice you or indeed anybody to come and search out the majestic landscape. It was a photo, falling in love with autumn on the Isle of Man. I don't know whether you saw this particular photo. The autumn feels a world away and so close to home on an island with majestic landscapes, an ancient and compelling history, a vibrant culture and a playground of natural beauty. Well, obviously Visit Isle of Man have paid to take space in Sunday Times. It's not for me to say, but I must say that the photograph they used is not the most inspiring. I don't know whether you saw that in the Sunday Times recently, but the photograph is of a couple with their backs towards the photo, the couple with rucksacks, bum bags and nylon anoraks staring towards a hill, just a hill. It's either a sunrise or a sunset. But thank you for that, a photographer. Glad to see you're keeping an eye on what the Department for Enterprise is up to within Visit Isle of Man. Maggie and Sulby. These are Maggie's words, by the way. Global warming is not going to happen. Nature is nature. What we should be doing is looking as to the consequences. Okay. Oh, global warming is going to happen. I beg your pardon, Maggie. Global warming is going to happen. Nature is nature. So what we should be doing is looking to what the consequences will be and addressing them. We don't want to waste taxpayers' money on what ifs. Surely, says Maggie, that's what we need to be doing. £73 for 17 kilograms of propane, says Christine. It has doubled in price. £73 for 17 kilograms. Any advance on that? Any discount on that anywhere? Thank you, Christine, for that. A recent documentary said the greenest way to grow our food is to grow things in a part of the world where they can be grown without artificial heat and light, and then to transport it by sea. Sea transport moves large amounts of produce for relatively little carbon dioxide. So the logic suggests we shouldn't be growing cannabis on the Isle of Man if we want to be green. You get the feeling that quote about statistics will come out. Everybody has a statistic about what can be generated. And certainly whether or not we can generate electricity sustainably, what's going to be, what will constitute green electricity? Because obviously solar panels have a carbon footprint. A wind turbine certainly has a carbon footprint. So our electricity really won't be green, will it? It will have a carbon footprint of some sort. It depends whether the carbon footprint is significantly less than it would be by burning the gas that we import down the Irish gas pipe from, well, where does our gas come from in the end? And thank you for that. That was a texter on 386. The ragged tip was also a problem tip, says John. And I'm a stopover since 1987. I can remember the furore about waste being taken to Paul Rose, says Jill. Well, I'm glad somebody else has spotted it. I'm not going mad. Did they used to truck loads of rubbish down from Wright's Pit to the incinerator to keep it going? I live at Cranstall in Bride, says Stella. Years ago, the recycle wagon used to go down late evening to the point, the recycle wagon, Stella, crikey, you haven't got any photos. Well, that would be years ago, wouldn't it? Here's a mention in that just says regarding the Middlemarch site, and this was Ursula who said, when is the Middlemarch site actually going to be developed? The Middlemarch site, the one for the new palace hotel, the Palace Hotel and Casino Limited, the Middlemarch site is the one back where the new kind of old police station is, back where the old Noble's Bath used to be, down Walpole Avenue. So really, from Fort Street to Walpole Avenue is the Middlemarch site. Well, architects, I can tell you, Ursula, architects for that £30 million commercial development in the centre of Douglas are said to be progressing well. The island property companies called Alto Stratus Limited wants to develop the Middlemarch site opposite the bus station, which of course is a tip. The Palace Hotel and Casino Limited would be the anchor tenant for the new development and would seek approval to transfer the casino licence from where it is on Central Prom to the Middlemarch site. Now, ADG Architects are based in Darlington. They're the people putting this all together, and John Bell is from ADG Architects regarding Middlemarch.
Yeah, the project's moving forward. We've currently been working closely with a local planning consultant, and we've also just been finalising the design. So we're sort of in the latter throes of the design development, making sure everything works from a design perspective, but also a legislation and regulation perspective. And we are sort of moving the application forward now, and we would be looking to submit early in the new year.
So you must be quite satisfied then with progress to date. And what are the key issues that need to be addressed before work can actually begin?
The key issues for us, we've got to look at the highways, making sure that the highways design meets all the regulations. There's been a couple of queries regarding the existing ground conditions. As you're probably aware, the area is all made ground. So we've been doing quite a lot of exploratory works into that side of it. And now we're sort of just, now all those sort of elements are sort of being ticked off. We're now moving into the detailed design, which is, again, this is the exciting bit now.
And I understand the Palace Hotel and Casino were announced originally as the main tenant for the development. Is that still the case?
I believe so, yes. So we were appointed by Alto Stratus Limited. So, but I know they are currently looking at different occupiers of the building as well. But I do believe the Palace are one of the main potential residents of the development overall, yes.
And what's your estimated timescale now to work beginning and then also to completion of the project?
We'd like to think that planning will come through sort of mid next year. and then construction will progress on from there. And I would think this will be at least an 18 to 24 month project, and it may be a phased project working on how the schemes develop, but I think overall they'll probably try to hit it all in one go.
That's John Bell from ADG Architects in Darlington, this new Middlemarch. And bearing in mind how big, I think Parkinson's built the Palace Hotel was about 1966 when they knocked down the old Colosseum, the old Palace Colosseum. But the Palace Hotel's got a lot going. Of course, it's got the rooms, it's got the casino, the cash bingo. They do a lot of functions. There's the cinema there, two-screen cinema. The health club with the swimming pool and all the fitness suite and everything that goes with it. And there's a Chinese restaurant where Toffs and Colours used to be. Are they going to fit all that at Middlemarch?
It's Christmas party time at Pizza Napoli. Bring friends, family or your workmates for a delicious three-course festive meal. From a glass of Prosecco to chicken liver pate to Christmas star-shaped pizza and cannelloni, right through to Christmas pudding. We're open through the darker evenings from 3 p.m. right through until 9 p.m. Sundays to Thursdays and until 10 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays. Book and order at pizzanapoli.im. And happy Christmas from all of us at Pizza Napoli. Spectrum.
This is my last will and testament. To my family, I leave years of financial headaches, large legal bills, and the prospect of having to sell our home to pay for it all.
Is that the legacy you choose to leave? Without a proper will and thorough planning, it could happen. Mann Benham Advocates, experiencing wills, probate and estate planning with a friendly service to make sure the future of your loved ones are secure. Don't put it off. Call 639 350 for your free initial consultation with Mann Benham. Here for you.
Are you winter ready? Don't leave your heating oil order till it's too late. Call Ellen Bannon Fuels on 844-000 and our friendly team will do the rest. 844-000. Winter's sorted with Ellen Bannon Fuels.
It's a tough time for businesses. Not sure what to do to turn things around? Let Nicola Bowker & Co. guide you through. We've helped hundreds of businesses to success. Accountants and tax advisors to businesses on the Isle of Man.
The Man in Line, brought to you by NetZeroMatrix.com, the Isle of Man's main net zero progress website.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Thanks for that. I got a note in from Graham who said, I was listening to the 2-minute silence on Manx Radio yesterday and I was disappointed during the 2-minute silence that presenters and somebody from the Cenotaph was talking through the silence. Surely, what happened? I'll let you into a secret. The Douglas ceremony went to the silence early yesterday. Didn't happen at 11 o'clock. The Douglas ceremony went to the silence at almost 3 minutes to, I think it was 2.5 minutes to 11. So there was sound at 11 o'clock, but it wasn't during the silence. The silence was actually for 2.5 minutes rather than two. It was just that the organisers at Douglas got a little ahead of themselves and they went to the silence early yesterday. Sean in Ramsey says, last 17 kilogas bottle was £104 4 weeks back. And a note in from 807 said, rubbish was brought from the UK to help the energy from waste plant as there wasn't enough rubbish on the Isle of Man then. Is that true? I mean, it's going back a while since the incinerator was, and about half a dozen owners since the energy from waste plant. Why is the airport closing during the day, says Andy? Well, apparently there's a shortage of air traffic controllers. This morning, I think some flights were held until they got an air traffic controller on duty this morning around 8 o'clock. And certainly, I think the word is that from 8:15, there is no air traffic controller on duty. We've extended an invitation to Gary Cobb, who's the airport director, to come on Man in Line. So that invitation still stands. And early in December, Chris Thomas, MHK, the infrastructure minister, will be on Man in Line. So it just seems that the airport is, Well, it's not all going right. Let's just put it that way. When I was a kid, they tipped rubbish up by the red houses on the Ramsey Road. I don't know how long ago that was. Well, it could be a while. And G said human, animal and vegetation waste will always be produced, so surely our energy solutions should factor in the use of them for methane. It's happening quite a lot around the world. I understand that lots of landfill in various places around the world is being tapped. They're putting in pipes to gather the methane waste and running small power stations off the back of them. Although it does take an awful lot of money to do it, it doesn't take all the methane away, and it doesn't produce an enormous amount of electricity. But, we're reaping what we sow. And certainly keep an eye out for that Charles Gard video regarding Wright's Pit. But Julian's point about those 150 geese, did they die with avian flu, because of avian flu, or did they eat something from the landfill? That's it for Man in Line today. Back tomorrow, 12 noon. High noon with another open line. Thanks to Chris Quirk today producing. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.
WINT